ABC Radio Darwin, Mark.
It's a very topsy-turvy world, and as the Rolling Stones would say, you know, all the cops are now criminals and all the sinners are saints, and everything seems different to how we thought it used to be put together. And so it's hard to imagine a day that goes by without something in the media saying that what was good for you is bad for you, or that something different. Everyone has an agenda. So I thought I would have no agenda at all. I would look at these things objectively and trying to work out whether I should tell my kids to eat chocolate or not, whether I should have a beer when I lined up at the bar instead of a glass of wine. What are the differences between them? What is the evidence for that?
You run a research unit at Monash University looking into health priorities and giving your scientific verdict on a huge range of topics when it comes to health. So keen to separate some of the facts from some of the fiction, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Do people, or should I say, why do people get drunk more quickly on champagne? Is that true or false?
Oh, that's absolutely true, specifically at weddings and particularly when the bottle is just opened. And this is how it works, essentially, is that alcohol is in the drink, but in order to be getting into your brain and intoxicating you, it has to get into your bloodstream. And in order to do that, it has to be absorbed through your intestine. So getting there is part of the issue. So when you take a glass of, let's say, a nice glass of red wine, as many of you will be considering right now for your health, it will have some effects immediately on you. But because it takes a while to get through into your intestines, where the surface area is something like the area of a tennis court, that's when the absorption really starts, and that's when it really starts making a difference to your thinking. Whereas if you have something that has a little bubbles in it, for example, your cold beer that you're also considering right now on your Monday afternoon, the bubbles themselves will, when they hit your stomach, start coming out. And of course, the heat in your stomach and the movement there will bring them out. So imagine what would happen if you took a beer can, put it outside in the Darwin sun, shook it about up for a few minutes and then opened it. That same thing happens in your stomach. And that's why that ice cold beer actually is more intoxicating immediately. You get more of an initial effect than the wine. For many people. And then, of course, going to the champagne, which contains 10 to 50 times as much dissolved gas, which is why it's in this steel-reinforced container of champagne, suddenly when that hits your stomach, suddenly the gas explodes and pushes the alcohol down to your tennis court of absorption. And that's why very quickly you get drunk at those weddings.
So the obvious question, and this is a conversation I've had many, many times, when it comes to alcohol, no alcohol is good for you. And this is the standard line that is now being purported in the media. What do you say?
Well, that's a bit of a cop-out for a number of reasons. The first is that alcohol can be an enormous source of domestic bliss and comfort for so many people, and is for so many people. But it's a very precarious line, that it's very easy that if you have that bottle of wine, you have a glass, and then there's still some wine left behind. And so you go, well, maybe I'll just have another one. And so if you can exercise self-control and experience self-awareness of how you're feeling, then in fact, those people who do that every day actually do have a longer life overall. It may have nothing to do with the wine. It's actually to do with the kind of people who can do that. Whereas if you're a person that easily gets sucked into the next glass, alcohol can be a death trap. As the famous poet Homer Simpson once said, alcohol is the cause and cure of all evils. And that's probably true. And so avoiding it sometimes is the best thing that you could possibly do, rather than fall down that slippery slope.
Continuing the beverage conversation, caffeine, is it really a performance-enhancing drug?
Absolutely. In fact, it's banned in racing horses as a means of enhancing performance, much like chocolate is, interestingly. Of course, the same sort of thing happens to us on those, you know, maybe the Monday morning you felt it this morning, that first cup of coffee made a real difference to how you're feeling. It increased your focus. It increased your attention. If you're out on the road, it actually significantly improved your driver performance. You pay attention much more than you do without that cup of coffee. It only goes so far, however, and It used to be, in fact, banned in the Olympics as a performance-enhancing drug, caffeine was. But it's no longer banned in the Olympics. And the simple reason is that maybe the first or second cup can improve your performance. But after that, actually, performance goes down. And no one would be crazy enough to have that much coffee overall. So, yes, it's a performance-enhancing drug. Yes, it increases focus and optimism. But there is an interesting downside to caffeine that some of your listeners would actually recognize, is that by increasing performance, it actually suppresses creativity. In other words, you don't think laterally because you are so focused with that coffee. You don't remember as many things as you did because you're so focused with that coffee. And a classic example of this was a lovely experiment done by researchers in the United States that took a group of accountants who were told to focus on a problem, but this problem required lateral thinking, required leaps of faith and creativity. When they gave them a glass of water, compared to a glass of water, the caffeine actually reduced the chances of them solving that problem. By contrast, when they gave them a little bit of alcohol, actually they did much better in that creative problem. So a little bit of alcohol increases creativity and reduces focus, and we all know what that does. By the opposite, actually, caffeine does the opposite, increases focus and actually suppresses creativity. So each have their right place in moderation in all of our lives.
Oh, in moderation. My mother used to say that. Well, chocolate. And you have mentioned chocolate and racehorses. Never put those two things in the same sentence. But what about sex? What about your sex life and chocolate? Can it improve it?
Chocolate does amazing things depending on who it's given to and when it's given to. I mean, the whole purpose of Valentine's Day has now become, imbued with the libido-enhancing powers of chocolate. There are no chemicals in chocolate that have any difference in libido, but in fact, they have a very powerful effect psychologically. We all remember them as a reward. We all associate them with Valentine's Day. I mean, no one feels sexy after receiving an Easter egg, and it's got the same amount of chocolate. But it's actually all about the right time and the right place. Chocolate can make a world of difference, so long as it's real chocolate. That's the most important thing. I mean, and by real chocolate, I mean that milk chocolate doesn't actually contain any chocolate solids, so it actually doesn't count. So compared to dark chocolate, the standard chocolates, the brown chocolates that we kind of eat, have about a quarter of the milk solids of dark chocolate, whereas white chocolate has no chocolate at all. So it's no business being called chocolate at all. It's just butter fat. You know, it's just the cocoa fat altogether.
Phil is in Woolagi this afternoon, has a question for you with regard to coffee. G'day, Phil.
Andrea, how are you?
Oh, I'm very, very happy that I can continue to eat chocolate, quite frankly.
interested because of the conflicting information that we get. Last week on one of the morning programs, they ran a segment on coffee saying that the latest research shows that 4 cups of coffee a day increases longevity and health. So a bit of conflicting. So what's the right number?
You find yourself in an interesting position there because, of course, when you always have this conflicting information all around you, when everything seems that used to be good is bad for you, it's like the famous car racer plus actor Paul Newman says, when the world seems upside down, the best thing is not to put the brakes on. Just keep going because it's not going to make any difference anyway. And a lot of people do that with their coffee and their alcohol. But there does come a point for many people that too much coffee is too much. And some people are sensitive to it. Some people get jittery to it. Most people who take a regular amount of coffee are quite happy with the between 2 and 4 cups a day because they have got a tolerance to and have built up a way to metabolize the caffeine. In terms of that effect on longevity, I think it reflects the kind of people that drink 2 to 4 cups a day rather than the coffee itself. Caffeine is our closest thing to a time machine. It makes time disappear because we are focused on one thing and don't pay attention to others. So a small amount, up to 4 cups, I think is absolutely fine for you. If it doesn't upset your bank balance and you enjoy it, that's all right. Always a balance, always moderation. I know I'm really boring about saying that things, but actually that's the way to do it.
Just finally, sunshine. It is something that we have in abundance in Alice Springs, in Katherine, in Darwin, right across the Northern Territory. We are continuously told about skin cancers, about staying out of the sun, about being sun smart, about slip, slop, slap. We're also told that we're vitamin D deficient. What's the truth?
We get plenty of sunshine throughout the year to average out all of those things. Earlier, you were, when I said the word moderation, you went, "Oh no, moderation!" But that's exactly how we consider sunshine. Sunshine is the key example of moderation. We need some sunshine to get our superpowers. Just like Superman gets all his energy from the light of a yellow sun, if we don't get sunlight and don't get vitamin D, it increases our risk of all sorts of health diseases, including thin bones. But obviously too much, and it carries forward in terms of our risk of skin cancer into the future. So there is a middle road. We don't have to get our sunshine all at once, but a little bit of sunshine every day, particularly if you can add a bit of physical activity into it, and maybe even a bit of chocolate if you're lucky. That sounds a perfect combination for a healthy and long life.
ABC Radio Darwin.